Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And just lastly, a word about the away fans tonight. Incredible tonight.
Oh, they were incredible. So if they are able to produce the atmosphere that they produced today in Anfield, I'm expecting that at the Emirates it's going to be even better. We're going to need them to be that top side like Liverpool. We are going to need it right behind them. But first of all, thank you for what they've done today, for travelling here, because it made a huge difference on the team.
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, is it Goodley? Is it? Do you think?
I'm gonna say it is.
Okay.
I'm gonna edge into Goodley Morning.
All right.
Why not? You know, we've got to enjoy the good results when they come. And I think in context, that was a very good result.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we didn't win, we didn't score, we didn't really threaten too much, but as you say, in the circumstances, to come away from Anfield with a 0-0 draw going into a second leg of a semi-final, with everything that was going on, with everything that happened before the game, during the game, and everything else, yeah, it's a very good result, and there's a lot to like about it. So let me ask you this. When you describe to me your mood pre-game, Martin Odegaard has got COVID. It looks like Tomiyasu won't play. Looks like Smith Rowe won't play. Liverpool, miraculously, somehow, Lord knows how, it's a miracle of science and nature and all of those things together, have basically their full squad, their full strength team available to them, bar Salah and Mane, who of course are at the African Cup of Nations. But beyond that, they have everyone. They've got all their players. They've got Ronnie Whelan. They've got Steve McMahon back in there. They've got Kenny Dalglish, Ian Rush on the bench. Yeah. It's all happening for them. They feel so confident, they can even put a 62-year-old Bruce Grobbelaar on the bench. It's full strength from Liverpool. It's about half strength maybe for Arsenal. Will you consider our squad? Tell me your mood. What were you thinking? How are you feeling about this?
Well, a bit aggrieved, I think, as all Arsenal fans were, and a bit down on my luck in terms of the team we might have been facing in the first leg versus the team that we were. I guess this is the fixture that didn't move, you know, so the players they had available for this one, they always would have had. The question is who they'll have available for the second leg, the Emirates leg, that they might not have done. But, and I this is going to sound wise after the fact, but check the timeline, it's all there. I wasn't as worried as some.
Okay.
Because I do think, believe it or not, you take Mohamed Salah and Sadio Mane out of that Liverpool team, and I think it's a very different beast. And as much as our squad was, you know, heavily depleted, in terms of the actual 11 we were able to get out on the field, there were only really three key players missing: Tomiyasu, Partey, and Odegaard, who the guys have been starting all the games.
It's
a blow to miss Odegaard and Smith Rowe. But what I mean is, from our first choice starting 11. There with, because Lacazette was in there, albeit in a different role.
Right.
But I really thought that we could go there and at least make it a contest. I didn't think that half an hour in, but before the game, I was actually more optimistic than most. But what about you?
I was more fearful than you were. I'll admit I was more fearful. I thought, you know, particularly the absence of Odegaard, you know, coupled with Smith Rowe, when you need some incision, you know, here's me foolishly thinking we could play 11 versus 11 for 90 minutes without something happening. And in that circumstance, you're looking for players who can make a bit of a difference, who can create something, who can, you know, maybe gel the assemble parts of this team together in a way that, you know, might cause Liverpool some problems. So I was a bit more worried than you. And after half an hour or so, 27 minutes, whenever he got the red card, I was particularly worried. I was a bit like, well, fuck this. Fuck this fucking game, fucking football, fucking Liverpool, fucking Carabao Cup, fucking fuck it all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I started from a more positive position, but by the time Granit Xhaka was sent off, I wasn't at Anfield, I was at home, and genuinely, I had to resist an urge to turn it off because I was like, this is going to be brutal.
Yeah, I thought it was going to go all kinds of wrong from there. And I think the focus of this podcast, although we're going to have an inevitable discussion about the circumstances that we found ourselves in and why, the response from that group of players between the red card and the final whistle was unbelievable, phenomenal. It was like, I didn't think we could do that. I certainly didn't think we could do that against Liverpool, particularly when, even with 11 men, we've struggled against Liverpool in the past, albeit one, as you say, with a slightly more potent front line with Salah and Mane. But just the weight of recent fixtures, the fact it was at Anfield, down to 10 men again, I was like, oh, God, this is not going to be any fun. And by the end of it, by the end of this game, I was fucking loving it. I loved it. It was just, there was just something about the way they worked collectively, individually. It was just fantastic. Even though it was a nil-nil, and, you know, there are things that we can be really worried about, you know, in general, when you sort of come back out of that immediate sphere of that game, when you look at, you know, what's coming up, what issues we're going to have going forward. But for that hour, I just thought, you know, the more it went on, the more I enjoyed it, and the more I was desperate for them to come away from this game without conceding the goal that would have in some ways rendered the effort not useless, but you take so much more from keeping a clean sheet at Liverpool in those circumstances than a sort of creditable 1-0 defeat, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I think they'll take masses from it. I really do. I think for this group, it could be a real building block, and it will be something that they reflect upon. I mean, it was not miles away in terms of the performance from what we saw in the second half against Manchester City, I thought, in terms of the commitment, the organisation, but they were doing it for that much longer and away from home. And also, you know, they didn't get any luck at all against City the way they conceded the goal. They had to ride it a little bit, a couple of instances at Anfield last night. But I think they just gave absolutely everything. I mean, it was a really positive result. But when the full-time whistle went, there were no celebrations because they all just collapsed to the ground.
Yeah.
Gabriel Martinelli flat out on his back. Some of the centre-halves, I think, you know, just sort of collapsing in the penalty area. But as a fan, it's great to watch. I do love a backs-to-the-wall grind, especially when you come through the other side. And I just have to applaud the commitment, the effort, I think the concentration as well. I mean, yes, it's physically exhausting playing with 10 men, being on the back foot that long, but mentally, it's so draining. So draining.
I mean, that's why I was listening to Paul Merson on Sky afterwards, and he was sort of, like, he wasn't really downplaying it, but he was sort of saying, you know, it was pretty simple for Arsenal. All they had to do was sit in and defend, and, you know, it's not complicated. And I think when it comes to what you have to do, I think that's absolutely right. It isn't complicated. You can't play Liverpool at Anfield with 10 men and try and play open passing football. I don't know how many passes we made on the night. I think it was six or something in total, right? But, you know, to say this is what you have to do is one thing. To do it for 60, 70 minutes is another thing entirely, because like you say, it's physically really demanding. It requires huge amounts of concentration and organization to make sure that the shape you keep is kept, that you're not pulled apart, that you're not, you know, dragged out of position, that they can then take advantage of the extra man and the extra space. So it's a simple thing to say or to put on paper, but actually executing it and carrying it out is really not simple at all. And the players deserve massive, massive credit for the way that they did that. And I suppose we have to give credit by proxy as well to the manager for like he said afterwards, we didn't train for this, which seems a bit of an odd thing when you've got Granit Xhaka in your team. But there you go. I mean, look, you prepare for certain game scenarios, but maybe they weren't planning on being down to 10 men. But, you know, he took Eddie Nketiah off. He put Rob Holding on, went to a back three, and you know, the reward we got for that was the fact that we came away from Anfield without conceding a goal.
Yeah, I mean, they don't train to play in that style, in that shape. I think one of the things we've liked about Arsenal more recently is the way they've sort of tried to play their game, kind of whoever the opponent is. So it's not something you're prepared for, and that requires a degree of flexible thinking from the players, improvisation, and just masses of concentration. I mean, I think it was Benjamin White in his post-match interview. They said, how was that? And he basically said, it's terrible.
It's terrible, yeah.
and you know, I think it's like being on the rack. I mean, you know, you can do it as a training exercise for 10, 15 minutes, but doing it in a hostile atmosphere for an hour is a completely different thing. And honestly, front to back, I take my hat off to those players. I mean, the away fans were fantastic, I thought, on the night, and that was clear on the television. But the players matched them, you know, and they really gave them something to cheer and believe in. And what must have felt like it was going quite sort of dark, taking a dark turn at that point in the first half for the travelling fans. By the end, I bet those were huge celebrations at full time.
And
rightfully so, because they gave absolutely everything and they were rewarded for it. I mean, obviously, there's a potential cost to that in terms of what it means for the weekend, but I'm sure we'll get to that in due course.
What can you do in the circumstances? You have to play the game as it's there. I thought the Ben White interview was great. I really liked it. I mean, there's a touch of the Aaron Ramsey's about him in that, you know, he's not going to say anything particularly controversial, but that bit where he spoke about how he was asked, how was it out there? And he was going, oh, it's terrible. I think that tells you something about him as a player. I think he is very much a ball-playing center half. You know, he's happy to do the defending, but I think he likes to be on the ball. I mean, I was watching that game. The more it went on, the more I was going, oh, God, I'd love to play in that game. You know, I can remember playing in games like that. And I loved it when you were up against it and you were just backs to the wall, defending. But Ben White wants to be, you know, on the ball, making a difference, making the passes. But, I mean, he was absolutely brilliant last night. I thought he was probably our best player, and I don't really want to single anyone out because the effort that everyone put in from front to back was brilliant. You know, Martinelli made as many tackles as Ben White, and that's the most that any Arsenal player made. I think it was 3. So you could see with that, Lacazette made clearances. Everyone made clearances. Everyone made tackles. Everyone made interceptions. You know, that collective effort was superb, but he pretty much led the line, if you like, in terms of, you know, how we defended, when there was somebody who needed to be dealt with, when there was a ball that needed to be cleared. You know, I think he just stood a little bit above the rest, and that's a big, big performance from him.
It is, and while I agree with you, he's someone who's happier on the ball, I do think that he, this season, some of his finest performances have been on the defensive side. And he certainly seems to buy in when it comes to that defensive commitment. You know, in that group, it's hard to describe, but there's almost like a peer pressure to not concede, and he's part of it, you know. And I think that's so important in a back four or defensive unit.
Yeah.
That sense of, I spoke on here before about how clean sheets are a culture. You know, it's something that you have to care about every single day. And that's something that this group seem to have, maybe more so than any Arsenal defence I don't know, certainly since the sort of Mertesacker-Koscielny period. And he absolutely, even though it might not be what comes naturally to him, is part of that. I thought he was fantastic last night. And I think he's played more minutes than any other first-team player at this point. He basically plays all the time in every competition. I think that, I mentioned this to you on a text last night, but I do think that as we go forward and we start to look at, you know, who's going to be the captain of this team next season, I wonder if Ben White's name will come into contention just because he's becoming such a pillar of this team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. He's certainly, you know, put himself well and truly in the mixer for that particular honour. I mean, when you talk about minutes, I'm just going to get them up here and see who's played more. Yeah, I mean, Ben White, 1,928 minutes. Next best is Bukayo Saka, 1,763. Ramsdale, Gabriel, Odegaard, Smith-Rowe, and Partey after that, you know. So, yeah, he was really, really excellent. And I think he's had a few moments since he joined, which are completely understandable for a young central defender. He's still really young in the auspices of a centre half. But he is growing in stature and growing in importance. And, you know, you look at that unit back there. I know Tomiyasu wasn't there, but we had four parts of that five, really, where we had White, Gabriel, Ramsdale, Tierney, and then, of course, Cedric to start. But Callum Chambers came in, who to me seems a little more simpatico with that style, if you know what I mean. I know we've mentioned this before, that he is a bit more like Tomiyasu than Cedric is. But, you know, he's another guy who came in who I think deserves credit, because when he came on, I was looking at him and I was looking at him running. Maybe he wasn't warmed up properly or whatever it was, but I don't know. I look at him running, I look at him moving, and I see a guy who's maybe got some issues that we're not aware of, just in terms of his physicality, whether it's injuries catching up with him or whatever. But he really, really grew into the game. I think he made 8 clearances, which is more than any other Arsenal player last night. You know, and having not played since when, the previous round or the round before that, you know, back in September, October, to come in those circumstances, in that context, down to 10 men, and to be a big part of that backs-to-the-wall effort, I think Chambers deserves a bit of a mention too.
Yeah, he does, because he's really been on the outside looking in, and I agree with you, actually. In that first 10-15 minutes on the pitch, there was a couple of times where I thought he was really struggling for mobility and to, you know, keep up with Andy Robertson on the outside, and I feared for him a little bit because he was playing in that wing-back role, which is quite demanding physically, and I'm not sure he's there yet at the present time. Maybe it is just down to that complete lack of match practice, which would be completely understandable. He's not playing any football at all. To come in and play like that, having not played at all, is really commendable. I think it was a performance that should nudge him up the pecking order. I can't really see why Cedric is better than Callum Chambers. And if he can get himself fit, I think he's certainly the more natural replacement for Tomiyasu in that role. I know it was a bit different last night with the back five, and at times he was almost playing like a fourth centre half that right hand side. But yeah, I think he probably deserves a bit more game time than he's had, assuming that he's physically capable of it.
Well, that's it. That's it. I've been trying to get my head around it. We had a question on the Discord as well from Woody, who says, why does Arteta prefer Cedric to Chambers? We know his limitations, but Chambers seems the most obvious understudy to Tommy, at least for the rest of this season. Cedric is not very good and plays in a different way, causing more disruption to the back four if he plays. I just don't get it. The only thing I can think of is that there is an issue, or that there is something about his physicality that you know, is impinging his first team chances. Because like for like, if you're looking for a player to do what Tomiyasu does, Callum Chambers is the obvious next guy to do that. I don't think he can do it as well, but if you don't want to disrupt the team, then he seems like the obvious choice. So I do wonder if there's something in the background going on with him that we're not quite aware of, which is why when Tomiyasu is out, Cedric is the guy getting the nod.
it's such a drop-off, though. I mean, well, for a start, it's about a foot of drop-off from Tomiyasu to Cedric.
Yeah.
I mean, Tomiyasu is probably our best...
header of the
maybe
ball.
Maybe apart from Gabriel, but probably our best header of the ball. Certainly wins more headers, I think, than any other player in this team. He wins about three headers per game, puts him out at number one. And in fact, you know, Ramsdale's kicking was off yesterday, but Tomiyasu is so often the target, right? And it's a very different thing launching it out. And he did launch a couple out to the right flank, and you saw Cedric jump in there and thought, well, I don't really know why we're bothering with that.
Yeah. I liked his Instagram, Ramsdale's Instagram message. Which was like, maybe I'll kick one of these in now, whatever it was, quite good.
I think by his own admission, it was a bit wayward. But, I mean, to be honest, in the second half, I almost didn't mind that. It almost became like a rugby game, you know, can we just make some territory just to relieve the pressure?
Yeah.
But Cedric, I think, is just such a different type of fullback to Tomiyasu that it changes the way we have to play.
Yeah.
I think it affects Ben White. I think it affects... Bukayo Saka. I think Chambers did enough to put himself in contention. Maybe, we talked about this on Monday, but maybe he's going to have to be in contention for a midfield place. Who knows, given the dearth of options.
At this point. Okay, well, we're here.
Okay, I guess we're here.
We're here. And I know that some people have said, like there are a few people on the Discord, like, do you have to have the Granit Xhaka discussion? But I don't know how you can not talk about it in this game and overall in the context of Granit Xhaka being Granit Xhaka. So, red card?
Oh, it's undoubtedly a red card. I mean, it's about as clear a red card as you will ever see.
Yeah.
I think. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah. It's 100% a red card. I think Xhaka makes the most of it, but then why wouldn't he? Xhaka kicks him in the stomach or the chest.
Can I read this short extract from Johnny Liu's piece today? Because it really made me laugh. So it says, there were 23 minutes on the clock when Xhaka and Jota both chased down a long ball from Andy Robertson with very different ideas on how they were going to reach it. I will take the ball in my stride, use my strength to hold off the defender and fashion a strong shooting opportunity, thought Jota to himself. The laws of physics are there to be broken, muttered Xhaka under his breath. I am Granit Xhaka. I must karate kick this ball out of the air. The universe demands nothing less.
I thought
that was a very good summation.
I'm laughing because I just don't really know what to say anymore. You know what I mean? I really am at a loss about what more I can say about this player and what he does and what impact it has on us as a team. You know, last night it meant we had to play with 10 men. It meant that the players we had out there are more tired and more fatigued and probably have more aches and strains this morning. And then he's now missing for two games at a point where we just don't have any midfield players. Like, do you think for even a split second, Xhaka, when he was about to do what he did.
Flying through the air?
When he was thinking, like, I will karate kick this ball out of the stadium, whatever it is.
Sorry, we have to laugh, Andrew. It was, in some respects, very, very funny. But yeah, I know other people will not see the funny side at all.
But do you think there was just even a teeny tiny part of his 29-year-old, very experienced football brain that said, Thomas Partey is away at AFCON. Mohamed Elneny is away at AFCON. We haven't made any midfield signings. Martin Odegaard's out with COVID, so he probably won't be around for the weekend. Maitland-Niles has gone to Roma. Charlie Patino, we love this kid. And God, I don't want to have to put him in a position where he has to be thrown in at the deep end again. You know what? Maybe I won't karate kick this ball out of the air. I know that's a lot to go through your mind in a split second, but do you think any of that occurred to him?
Well, certainly not, and I don't think it ever would. I mean, listen, I have to be honest. When this happened, I've always got something to say about the football, as you know. I mean, literally, we come here and talk about it for an hour and a half. When this happened, I sat in silence for about 10 minutes. I think my wife came in and asked me a couple of like questions about things around the house, and I just was completely unresponsive because I had nothing. I was sort of frozen by it. Do you know what I mean?
I understand completely what you were saying, because the same thing happened in my sitting room where my wife was saying things to me and I was like, no, just don't talk to me for a second.
Yeah,
just
yeah, fine. Yeah.
It was like, do you want a crisp? No, I think about crisps in a few minutes when I tried to
come back
process
to me, come
this.
Come back to me at halftime.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my head around this. And at that point, I was very, that's like I said at the start, I was like, well, just fuck this. Fuck it all. Like, what's the fucking point of any of it if we're going to do things like that and things like that continue to happen with this player? Because, you know, more often than not, it is this player. And it's just, I genuinely don't know what to say anymore. Like, he is, it's a ridiculous situation that we're going into this derby on Sunday wishing we had Granit Xhaka. At the same time, thinking like...
he'd be sent off after 15 minutes.
Yeah, or like he could just as easily do something like this in this game. Like, how is he so important and also a liability? I mean, the answer is, of course, the squad isn't good enough. The squad isn't deep enough. And we have a significant issue in midfield that this guy who keeps doing these crazy things which cost the team remains an important part of, you know, whatever the fuck it is we're trying to do. I don't know. It's like,
well, last season we had the situation times two, arguably. And we talked about this a lot then in terms of David Luiz and Granit Xhaka were pretty integral figures in this Arsenal team. And with that came this kind of associated cost of their brains temporarily departing at various points in games. The answer is that we have to improve. We have to have somebody better. I think everybody pretty much is uniformly in agreement about that. And I think it will happen. I don't know if it will happen in January. I think it might be in the summer. But the thing I would say is that, you know, we worried about Luiz in some respects. There were plenty of people, I think myself included, who thought, for all its problems, there are going to be aspects of him that will be difficult to replace, be it his technical quality, be it his leadership. Look at the way we're talking about Ben White now.
Yeah.
You know, and we've moved on. And Ben White, he's had his moments, as you said, but at least in his case, you can put it down to inexperience.
Yeah.
I think that we are in a position where the rest of the team, the rest of the squad is looking stronger. There are more leaders emerging. We are in a position now, or certainly very close to a position where we're ready to move on from Xhaka. I think that is the difference at this time.
Yeah. I mean, we're ready and we have to, because I don't know how long you can continue. I just don't know how long you can continue to stick with a player whose mistakes are just costly. And I know we had this discussion previously, like, does there not have to be a conversation about, you know, how he's refereed and you know, maybe there are decisions that have gone against him which have been, well, if that was Granit Xhaka, and we know all that, right? But the other part of this is that we were talking last night on text about, you were making the point, like, why is he there? Why is he exposed? Why is he the last man? And I thought the analysis actually on Sky at halftime was quite good. Rather than just go, it's nil-nil, here's 14 minutes of ad breaks, they took a little bit of time to do some analysis of the game and of that particular incident. So the way that we play and the way that we like to push up means that in scenarios when, you know, the opposition transition, the way that they did, I still don't think we should be quite as open where one ball over the top exposes us that way. But, you know, it is part of his job, his remit as the player in that position in midfield to be aware of that danger. And to be fair to him, he was. He saw the danger. He tried to get back. until such time as he decided to karate kick the ball into fucking a different universe. But, you know, he wasn't shirking his duties. So I'm not critical of him for that. Critical of the decision that he made to carry out a challenge like that. But what this demonstrates is that you need somebody who's more athletic, somebody who's pacier, somebody who's quicker, somebody who can deal with a situation like that as and when they happen. They don't happen that often to us anymore, but what's clear from last night is that when it does, Xhaka just doesn't have the legs or the ability to manage a situation like that in the game. And that's part of why we need to upgrade as well. Not simply the disciplinary aspect to it where, you know, his red cards, he's suspended and all the rest of it. It is also the football aspects of what we need a player in that position to do.
I think that nails it because, you know, we can have a joke about I am Granit Xhaka and, you know, I'm going to karate kick this man out the sky. But the reality is he is sort of doing his job in that situation. He's just not doing it well enough.
Mm.
And we do overcommit. I mean, it's funny. It comes from probably what was at that point our best attacking moment in the game. I don't know if you remember.
Saka
gets down the right-hand side, cuts it across the box, and we just fail to make contact with it. Maybe it's Martinelli, maybe it's Lacazette, can't remember. And then Tierney and Gabriel push right up really aggressively.
Mm.
And in fairness, Xhaka's actually ahead of them at that point and makes like a 60-yard run to track Jota. And it's a brilliant ball. Do you think that the keeper should have come? On Sky, there was a lot of talk of Ramsdale could come.
I'm sort of surprised that he didn't because I remember I listened to him on the Crazy Ben Foster Wicked, Wicked Mate podcast. And one of the things he actually spoke about was how high they want him to play, how high up the pitch they want his starting position to be. And I think maybe he was caught in two minds there. Maybe he should have come.
I think he shouldn't have come from where he was because Paul Merson was like, if he comes from where he is, it puts Jota off. I think if he comes from where he is, he gets stranded. What the mistake is, he should have been higher when we were on the attack.
I think that's true.
That said, I think Xhaka, that thing that we said of like, does it go through a player's his mind of the consequences? I think most footballers, that doesn't go through their mind. I think that, you know, nobody would ever make a last man foul, really, and get themselves sent off because it's never worth it. But players in that instinctive moment have that natural tendency to prevent the goal. I just think you can make different justifications for it, but the pattern is so clear at this point, you know?
Yeah.
And there was an incredible stat last night of 13 red cards for Mikel Arteta's team since he took over. I think the next team had 8.
Yeah.
And I don't think these red cards are happening because we're a violent team, because we're overly aggressive.
No.
I think they come because we make mistakes and our technique in certain defensive situations has not been good enough. And I think that's the thing with Xhaka. For all the things you can say about his character, like if he's 2 yards quicker, he probably doesn't get sent off there. If he's more agile, he probably doesn't get sent off there. He was extremely stressed physically in that situation.
Yeah.
And that's why he gets sent off.
And that's
the problem. And it was at that moment, I thought wrongly, it was kind of the worst thing that could happen because not only had we lost an important player in the game, but we'd lost a player for Sunday in a position where we are already extremely thin.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's probably something we'll talk about in the second half of the show, just about what we might do and the consequences of that. And there are consequences. But I suppose,
but in a funny way, the sending off does provide a kind of clarity on the night, you know, in terms of what the task in front of Arsenal is. I don't think it makes it any easier, but switching to the back five and sort of saying, right,
yeah,
this is what it is. It's the Alamo and we're going to try and defend.
Yeah.
I think that it's always tricky to say it helped us, but I think it it made the task clearer.
I think that's true. I just one final thing on it. I've seen people say, you know, it was a good red card to take because, you know, Jota would have scored. I'm not sure that's true. You know, I don't...
It's still very difficult to bring that ball under control.
Yeah, I mean, it fucking clattered off him. I mean, the reason the ball went flying off him was because he was making the most of the challenge from Xhaka, but I don't think his control was that good. I mean, there's every chance it could have got away from him. Ramsdale or Ben White was there as well, I think, who could have made a clearance. So, you know, it's not a good red card. It's a stupid red card. It cost us on the night, and it's going to cost us in some ways on Sunday because, you know, we have no midfield depth whatsoever and no ability to cope with that. So I think it is a really dumb red card, but like you say, it made what we had to do very clear. And I think we should end, you know, this part of the podcast before we get into questions by again just talking about how incredible and committed. I mean, Arteta's comments afterwards were really, really interesting. He talked about spirit. He talked about fight. He talked about...
Brotherhood.
It was like, oh my God, fucking, you know, this is band of brothers kind of stuff. You know, I want players who will go to war. You know, whatever else you might think about what's going on, there is something there that he can tap into. Like, we can't measure fight and spirit. There's no Opta stats for brotherhood or fraternity or whatever the hell else. But you can see it when you see it. You know it when you see it as well. That another team, maybe in those circumstances, capitulates a little bit or lets their heads go down 10%, whatever it might be, just enough for a team like Liverpool to take advantage and score a goal, heads go down again, they score another goal, and then it's game over. And then it's just, it's damage limitation. It's nothing more than that. Whereas this remained a game in which we had something to play for. As long as it was nil-nil, we had something, you know, really tangible to play for. And again, I think these players deserve massive, massive credit. Every single one of them on that pitch, who stayed on that pitch last night, every single one of them. I know there were a couple who maybe weren't at their best. I mean, Ramsdale had some moments, and there was that miss from Minamino. But without that miss, we don't get that incredible picture of Ben White laughing at that miss. You know, you, in some ways, look, it's a cliche to say it, but you can earn some luck along the way. And I think we did last night because everything that we did was so committed. We deserved that little bit where the Liverpool player just, you know, made a terrible mistake in front of goal.
Definitely. I mean, Arteta spoke after the game. I thought it was quite interesting. He was saying defensively, you have to be active rather than reactive. And I think that was one instance where Ramsdale took that too far, definitely. But I do think that there is an aggression and a sort of psychological aggression in the way this team defends and the way in which they approach these scenarios. And I think the promise of a second leg probably gave them a huge amount of hope. If this was a one-off game and they went down to 10 men, I think it might have been more difficult. But I think that fact that if we can just get back to the Emirates, just get back to the second leg, having 11 men, there's such a reward for them now in terms of a game that they go and they know that if they win, they're through to a final. I think that would have fed them and kept them going. But yeah, I loved everything Arteta said after the match and particularly those comments about brotherhood. And he said, you know, I said before the game, I wanted to get people here on this pitch that I'm happy to go with to war. And today I've seen that. Don't find excuses with referees, with COVID, with situations. It is what it is. We come here and try to do our best. And one thing I have to say that I really admire about Mikel Arteta is I do think he very, very rarely will use an excuse. He very rarely will say, well, we were missing players, or well, we had 10 men. He's very focused on our own performance.
Yeah.
And that's what he talks about. And often when it goes well, he doesn't sit back and ask for plaudits. He talks about needing to do better. And I think he's I think he really does say all the right things, which I know is a skill. But I believe that the players buy into it, and I think we saw that last night. And yep. It's really interesting because physically it will have cost them dear, the amount of work they put into that. But I wonder what they might take from it psychologically, you know, if that can offset that going into Sunday. I hope so. It's going to need to.
Yeah, I think that's something we can hope for. I mean, it's weird, like the last couple of weeks, we've looked at some performances where the results maybe, you know, don't appear to be stellar, 0-0 at Anfield. I mean, you take it in a league game for sure, but, you know, it's a 0-0 draw and the 2-1 defeat to Manchester City, where we're looking at things that we're actively encouraged by, despite the fact that, you know, the results haven't been quite as good as we would like. And I think that's an interesting aspect to what's going on. So, look, I think we should take a break, unless there's anything else about last night you want to touch on, but we can probably deal with it in part two if you want.
Oh, just one other thing, okay. Which is that I think most Arsenal fans feel quite aggrieved about the postponement of the first leg, right, in terms of Liverpool having the game called off and it transpiring that they had all these false positives. I mean, it's undoubtedly suspicious and pretty aggravating. It, as frustrating as it is, the sweetest revenge for that would be to knock them out.
Yeah.
And that's the only real revenge that we can have for that. And I think, thanks to last night, that is a possibility. And I would really enjoy that, given all the shenanigans. I would very much relish that.
Yeah, I would too. Look, they played it well, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
And maybe there's an argument that, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. Maybe that's the way to operate if you want to be at that top level. But I don't know how well that sits with everybody, particularly when you're gaming the system around an issue like this pandemic and this particular thing, which has been so impactful on everyone's lives to some degree or another over the last little while. But yeah, look, let's see what we can do in the second leg. There are, of course, bigger fish to fry in the meantime. So no doubt we'll talk about that.
Smaller cockerels.
Yeah. Little spatchcocks. all right, let's take a break here. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnerblog and at Arseblog. Also on the Arseblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you're an Arseblog member on Patreon. Just for those people who were, asking, could we make this a Granit Xhaka-free podcast, which we couldn't do. We have had about 10 trillion questions about Granit Xhaka. Suffice to say, we're not going to do any of them because we've discussed it at length in the first part of the show. So this will be a Xhaka-free part of the podcast, although he may get mentioned, because we've got to talk about midfield for Sunday and things like
that. He may come flying through the air in a karate kick. into the podcast. Yes. We do not know.
Oh, he's just two-footed me right in the mouth.
Yeah.
Can I go first? Do you mind?
By all means.
It sort of follows on from what you were saying towards the end of the first part of the show, and it's two questions here. So first one comes, both of these from the Discord, one from Astonished, who says, do Klopp's shenanigans give credence to the idea that Mikel Arteta is rising in stature as a coach and a tactician? And Syke says, do you think the best in the players' characters is being brought out by Arteta? In his interview, Klopp was full of excuses, whereas Arteta gave none.
Klopp loves an excuse, I think. I really like Klopp. I think he's a really good manager and he seems like a pretty good man. But he does revert to excuses quite a lot in his dealings with the media. As I mentioned, I like it about Arteta that I don't think he often does. I think it's good because if you give players an out, they often take it. And I think you need to try and avoid that. I think his stock is high in the game. I have to say, I think that he's respected by other managers. I think he's very well regarded as a coach. You know, sometimes it feels like they're just blowing smoke up his ass. We all know who I mean when I say that, in terms of his former boss. But so good. Did you see that video that was going around on social media yesterday of Pep doing a team talk to Man City about how I destroyed football. In 4 years, I destroyed football. It's really something. It's on the All or Nothing.
I haven't.
Documentary. It's absolutely skin crawling. Really tough watch. But it's a bit like David Brent doing the motivational speech.
Is that the one where he goes, and who is this guy that destroyed football? Is me.
Guys, it's me. Yeah.
So destroy football, me.
But, yes, I think it is a compliment, I guess, in a funny sort of way. All these shenanigans and people maybe starting to take us a bit more seriously.
Mm.
Maybe that's something that's not always been the case. Is that your perception?
Yeah, look, I think the last few months have definitely been a step forward in terms of how this team is perceived and in how the work that he is doing is being perceived. Like, there are still people who doubt, and I understand that completely. We're halfway through a season. It's judge me in May and all that kind of stuff. But, look, I can see there are things about this team that I like a lot more than the team we had a year ago, you know? And they're not easily quantifiable, as we've talked about, but there are differences in the way that we approach things and the way that we react to things. What did he say last night? Was there a quote? He said, this is a baby team. I think something like that he said.
Did he?
Yeah, it could have been with a different interview. I think it could have been with Janar Aga Fjortoft.
Right.
Or I saw it on his timeline anyway, where he talks about a baby team and, you know, it's still growing. And the difference between, like, they asked Ben White and they asked Mikel Arteta, what is the difference between the performance that we got last night versus the performance that we got against Forest on Sunday, one of those which puts doubts in your mind and scratches at old wounds. But, you know, White said something, well, that's football. You know, that's the way it goes sometimes. And that's, you know, it sounds like a lazy explanation, but it's also true. There are days where it just does not happen for you. And that happened with, you know, our very, very best teams. There were days where it just didn't work, where we didn't turn up, where we weren't quite at the races. And you're talking about some of the best players in our history, you know, not being there for certain games. Like, you know, look back at, you know, results over the years and you go, like, how did that team draw with Charlton? You know what I mean? Things like that. And the explanation is football, and the actual difference between most football teams at the top level isn't so vast that these differences or weird results or weird performances can't happen. But I do think that something has changed in the last few months. It's about now maintaining the consistency. Like you say, when there are problems, Arteta doesn't really lean into those. And when there are things which go really well, like I remember him talking about, you know, after we played Leicester and beat Leicester away from home, and he said, well, we've done nothing yet. You know, whereas I think there might have been a temptation to say, this is great, look at what we can do. He'd been under pressure. I quite like the messaging in that it is consistent and it's not getting carried away one way or the other. So, maybe there is something to that. You know,
about- I don't know if you saw... Did you see the conversation with Bakary Sagna and Patrice Evra that was going
no,
on talking about him?
No, I try not to look at anything that involves... Evra.
His autobiography looks like it's going to be spicy, to say the least.
There's Patrice Evra, about... the day I licked a raw chicken. Can't wait for that chapter.
I thought it was interesting nonetheless, right. Especially Sagna, talking about their perception of Arsenal. And I do think that people within the game, I mean, how much we should take from their opinions is open to debate, do have a much more positive perception of the direction of the club right now. And that is heartening. And even last night, you know, my timeline, I've got fans who support other clubs or other journalists and a lot of comments about sort of the resilience of Arsenal. Would they have produced this 6 months ago, a year ago, 2 years ago? So I think it is there for others to see. We just have to hope we keep on doing it and we keep improving because, as Arteta would say himself, there's still an awful long way to go to where we want to be.
Yeah.
Well, we touched on this, I guess, briefly in the part one, but Wallan on the Discord says, "Morning, gents. Do you think Arsenal should attempt to get the derby on Sunday called off? Saka going off with an apparent injury, Martinelli unable to walk full time, Xhaka's red and a bench full of kids without Premier League minutes are surely grounds to get a game called off when added to our other issues."
Yeah, don't forget Cedric as well. Will probably be injured because he picked up an injury as well.
I think it's quite unlikely Martin Odegaard will be available given the timing of his coronavirus diagnosis. I mean, he played Sunday evening, right?
Yeah.
So he wasn't positive then. So if it was Monday or Tuesday, he's got day seven is the earliest he can get out. Unless they can argue his symptoms started before that game, but he was testing negative.
Oh.
It's going to be very, 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 very unlikely.
It is. Look, I think Mikel Arteta's public stance on this, that we want to play as much as possible, we want to play, is admirable. But I do wonder if, in this particular circumstance, we would be foolish not to try. I just saw here a guy called Dan Kilpatrick on Twitter. He's the chief football correspondent for the Evening Standard, mainly covering Spurs and England for his sins, but says Leicester versus Burnley on Saturday is off. Fair to say there are concerns at Tottenham this morning that Arsenal could request a postponement for Sunday given their situation. Now, I know that's not any insight into the Arsenal side of things, but when you look at all the players we have out, when you look at the fact that Jack is going to be suspended, we don't really have a midfield. I mean, we would be really down to bare bones if this game went ahead, you know?
I'm just going to quickly run through it in terms of numbers. So we've got Ramsdale and Leno, two keepers, because I think 13 is the threshold, right?
Mm.
So if we say Cedric's injured, we've got White, Gabriel,
Chambers.
Tierney, Chambers, Holding.
Tavares.
That's five. Tavares. Kolasinac, I believe, is injured.
Yeah, got a hamstring after that. You know, all the effort he put in the final couple of minutes at Forest.
Lokonga. Let's say Saka's fit. Martinelli, Lacazette.
Nketiah.
Marie and Nketiah. I think that's 12.
Get Pablo Marie out on loan ASAP.
Get Pablo Marie on a plane to Udinese. I mean, what do you want it off? It's not the worst time to play Spurs. I would say that. They are not playing well. I watched them against Chelsea. Mm. They were dismal. They haven't got Son, who to my mind is their best player, certainly in their best two.
Mm.
It's also not the worst time to play us. I mean, anything could happen in that game.
Yeah. I mean, if we have Smith Rowe and Tomiyasu available to us,
yeah,
I'd be inclined to go ahead. But...
let's say we do. What sort of team could we put out?
Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, White, Gabriel, Tierney.
Yeah.
it's got to be Sambi.
Yeah.
Then it gets really complicated. Then it gets really complicated because you don't have Xhaka. I don't think you can play Charlie Patino.
Ooh, no.
In that game. I just don't think you can do that. Who else? I mean, what? There was talk about Chambers, but I'm not sure. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, Chambers and White are the two, I think. But yeah, you'd be very loath to take White out of that back
four.
Yeah, I would be.
Do you maybe go with a back three? Do you play White holding Gabriel, Tierney, Tavares?
Yeah, I think we had a question about that.
Do you put Nuno in the front three? I don't know. I don't have a good answer to the other player in midfield. I don't think there is a good answer to that, to be honest. Unless you move Saka in.
Saka is a possibility. I think, could you play Sambi, Saka and Smith Rowe?
Maybe. I mean, what choice do you have?
I mean, I don't know who you're putting in the front three then, but...
Well, yeah. Martinelli, Lacazette and Nketiah again, I guess.
Nketiah from wide. Yeah, I guess. I guess that's an option.
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect. There are no perfect solutions here. I don't know. And look, afterwards, Arteta said, we've got some injuries. We've got some injuries after the game. Saka was clearly one. Cedric was one. There might be, you know, some cramps which turn out to be just that, but who knows what kind of assessment they will make, you know, when the players come in today. I'm sure they're going to be having a very, very sedate day at the training ground today, more about seeing how everyone's feeling and, you know, loosening out the knots and all that kind of stuff rather than intense training sessions. So
if they're going to request a postponement, they'll request it today.
Mm.
They'll be looking at everybody, seeing what they've got. I mean, knowing our luck, we'll request it and it'll be rejected, right? The problem is that feels like a massive psychological blow, doesn't it? If you ask for it to be off and it's not and you've got to play, I feel like psychologically, if you're preparing a team, that's far from ideal.
Surely we wouldn't request it unless we were confident that, you know, we fulfilled the criteria for a postponement.
Well, there have been rejections, that's all. But yeah, in different circumstances. I mean, we can get Martin Odegaard to go around kissing everybody. That's one of our options. I think it's 50-50, to be honest. I think a lot of it will come down to, there's no press conference today, I don't think, a sort of conventional press conference. There's going to be some quotes from Arteta, but he's not going to tell anybody if Smith Rowe's fit, if Tomiyasu's fit.
Yeah, I think the whatever quotes, I don't know if it's being done today, is it? Or was it done post?
This afternoon, I think.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, look, he gives so little away now anyway when it comes to team news. There's no team news updates on the website anymore. In the press conferences, he says, we'll wait and see, you know, over pretty much every fitness issue. So yeah. I don't think we're going to get any clarity. But if there is a
postponement... I think he's right to do that, by the way, because it's so variable at the moment. Why should you inform the opposition? I mean, Martin Odegaard, I think his diagnosis came in Tuesday, Wednesday. So they certainly knew. They could have told us, but why give Liverpool that insight? It's funny, you know. We've got to be close to the threshold. And arguably, if we are, we should use that to our benefit. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think we can put out a decent 11. It's just that central midfield area that's incredibly tricky. I mean, you touched on this yourself just then, but art teacher at Drawing Man 15 said, given us current squad depth issues, should we line up on Saturday in a similar formation to the one we reverted to last night? Do you think there's a chance of that? Three at the back?
It's possible, all right. It's possible because it might just give you that security where, you know, when you don't have... Like, I think you need a proper midfield to play the back four the way that we want to play. And I don't know that we can put out that proper midfield too. So it might be a case of changing the system. I mean, here's one from AS37 Gunnar on the Discord, who said, I asked this in a very specific way and would have asked it before the Xhaka red. What makes not signing Jack Wilshere until the end of the season a better option than signing Jack Wilshere until the end of the season, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I do. I've wondered about this because there are people who tell you Jack looks sharp and he's clearly still very talented and he's training well and everybody loves him. It's so obviously there that I have to presume there's something that we know or see in Jack that makes us think this is not a viable option. And the only thing I can add to that is to say that a number of Bournemouth fans who watched him as recently as last season have said to me, he's not close to what we would need in the, at the top end of the Premier League. I don't get any pleasure from saying that at all, but that's what Bournemouth fans have told me.
Yeah. Look, I he hasn't played since last May. Not a minute of competitive football, and there were, unfortunately for him, no clubs willing to take a chance on him, which is a real shame, you know, because the talent is unquestionable. The only issue can be fitness and sharpness and the ability to do it at the top level. I don't think in any normal circumstance you could make a good case for it. Absolutely not. I do wonder if in these exceptional circumstances where you're absolutely desperate for a midfielder, why you couldn't maybe take a chance. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But maybe you've just slightly eased the burden, if you like.
Yeah, like is it a worse option than Callum Chambers or Ben White in that position? I don't know.
I mean, all I can say is if he has been training and if he does look sharp and if the need we have is so obvious and as a very short-term solution, he's right there under the noses of everybody where they could, you know, bring him into the office, have a chat and say, look, we're really short. How about a temporary deal? Give you a deal until the end of the season. We don't have to pay you a great deal, whatever it might be. How about it? That they haven't done that probably suggests that there are concerns about his ability to perform at this level, which probably explains it, which is sad, but...
Here's a question from the real Twatter man on that theme. By the time the podcast is recorded, do you expect a midfielder to have signed, probably on loan, and registered by the midday deadline to be part of the squad for Sunday?
No. No, I mean, it's 10 past 11 now as we're speaking, so they have 50 minutes to make this sound wrong. But no, I don't expect anybody to come in before that particular deadline. Do you?
No. I mean, the reports of Arsenal's interest in Arthur are accurate. It seems that of the shortlist they had, he's the one they think they can get on loan. I don't think it's a fait accompli by any stretch because Juventus would like to replace him. I mean, he's quite an important... Although he doesn't start for them, he came on for them the other night in the Supercoppa final. He gets minutes here and there. It was never, I think, going to happen this week. And so we won't have him for Sunday, almost certainly. I think he will come. I think that will be the guy, and it will be a loan deal, probably without any option to buy at this point. But I don't see, unless they hand Jack a contract this morning, which they could do, but I think the reason I'm so dubious is just the way in which Arteta's dealt with the questions on it. He really has knocked it down. He's not even left it open.
No.
Do you know what I mean? He's not even said, well, you know, maybe. He's been pretty transparent about the fact it's not going to happen. So I don't see that changing. Mikel's going to have to register himself, I guess.
Yeah, he might be player manager, Mikel Arteta. Speaking of, you know, we've spoken about midfield there and a potential arrival in Arthur from Juventus.
Yeah.
Luke on the Twitter, who's at LChapman5, says, "Morning, gents, long-time listener, first-time caller, etc., etc. Assuming everyone will ask about the X word today. So here's this. At what point do you move on from Dusan Vlahovic, assuming that if he was going to sign, it would have already happened?" I'm curious as to your take on this or whatever little bit of information you might have that you might be able to share, but I have got a nagging sense that we are being led down the garden path a little bit by agents who are maybe thinking about doing something else.
I've always had a sense that this felt a bit like the Locatelli interest in the summer, where Arsenal were certainly in the mix and prepared to sign the player, but the player was minded to do something else, and that was signed for Juventus. And I think that's very possibly what's in Dusan Vlahovic's mind. He scored again last night. I don't know if you saw his crazy game. Torreira played for Fiorentina. They won 5-2 at Napoli in the Cup.
Right.
They had 10 men. Napoli had 9 men.
What the shit? And,
yeah, 9 men. Napoli got a 94th minute equaliser to make it 2-2. And they ended up losing 5-2. Vlahovic scored a great goal to open the scoring. Lovely touch in the box. Good finish across the keeper. I think highlights are on YouTube. They are worth watching just because it was a mental, mental game.
Going to try and get the goal here.
Yeah. I think he looks like a really exciting goal scorer. You know, he finishes like Van Persie, but he's got the sort of power of Andy Carroll. It's kind of an interesting crossbreed.
Did you see Andy Carroll's 2 disallowed goals the other day? Holy
Andy
shit.
Andy Carroll can play. His problem has been injuries in his career.
Mm.
Vlahovic, I think, has so far avoided stuff like that. And I think he's got, his finishing power is pretty amazing. I think there is about a 30% chance that he comes to Arsenal, because I think Arsenal were the only horse really in the race in January. And I think Fiorentina would like to move him on if they can get a good price.
It's a nice goal.
Yeah, nice goal, isn't it? Nice touch, nice finish.
Quick feet for a big man. I mean, do you know what he is? He reminds me of, you know the way in The Simpsons, Bart had a brother that lived up in the attic?
Yeah.
Like if John Hamm had a brother who lived up in the attic, it would be Dusan Vlahovic. How does he look 40 and he's only 22 or something?
I know.
I don't get it. Anyway.
A big man.
Lovely
goal. So I think about 30%. That's my opinion based on things I'm hearing. There was a great piece in the Financial Times yesterday. Did you read that?
No.
About Fiorentina. Oh, the Fiorentina owner.
I have it bookmarked, yeah.
Well, it's worth reading. He's an interesting character, the owner of Fiorentina, but there's a lot in there about Vlahovic's agents. And I think they wanted an €8 million payout just for him to sign a new contract. That's partly the reason he's for sale. If Arsenal are to do this deal, they will have to really bite the bullet and pay some people up. I mean, there's people involved with Vlahovic who know this is their payday and they intend to maximise it. It would be a significant departure from the business we did in the summer in that respect. I know he fits the age profile, but when you look at the agents of the players that we signed, they're all from smaller agencies, and I'd be surprised if the players' salaries were in the region of what Vlahovic would be demanding. I think our spending on that side, salaries and agents' fees, was sort of relatively conservative in the summer.
Mm.
But it is an opportunity. And I think Arsenal know that this is their only shot, probably, at getting this guy. And so they're going to go for it. I think what it really hinges on is his decision. And there's nothing coming from him that indicates he's desperate to make the move. You know, Fiorentina are pressuring him for a decision. They've said that publicly. They want a decision. And no decision has been forthcoming. So I'm not overly optimistic at this point.
Yeah. So at what point then do you... What do you
I
do?
Don't think I, mean, any, I, yeah. I don't think the other targets are achievable, particularly in January. I mean, I think, you know, Isaac, there's a buyout, but it's high. It's in the region of 70 or 80 million.
Which is what you pay. Yeah, he's not scoring.
And he's not a guarantee. He's not necessarily a reliable goal scorer. Calvert-Lewin, I don't think is possible. And he's just coming back from injury. Barely played this season.
Mm.
I kind of think it's Vlahovic or Aubameyang. That's kind of how I see it. I think they get Vlahovic or they got to mend some bridges.
Yeah, we had a question from the chief at macho_grande1. So everyone is dead. Is it time to bring back Aubameyang? Which is, you know, the first part of that is slightly dark, but I think I know what he means. That, like, if the Vlahovic thing doesn't go through, if one of the other targets that we have who might be available in the summer isn't available in January, how important does it become then to reintegrate Aubameyang? And is that even possible based on what's happened? Or is there a need for everyone to sort of sit down and say, look, in the interest of expediency and the team and the club and what we're trying to achieve, let's find some kind of accord between now and the end of the season, and then we do what seems to be inevitable and go our separate ways. That's kind of easier said than done, I know.
Yeah, it is.
It's easier said. It's easy to say, look, let's just put that behind us because we are where we are with this situation for, you know, reasons perhaps that we don't know and don't understand or whatever's gone on. And you can say, well, look, for everybody's sake, we should just, you know, forget about it. But there comes, you know, it's not quite as simple as that, that, you know, things have happened that can't unhappen just because, you know, you feel like they should. There are.
I agree. There's a lot of pride on both sides. And someone said to me yesterday, they were like, I sort of voiced that possibility and they said, well, you know, I don't know if Arteta can row back on this, you know, he's taken such a strong stance, and I think he can definitely afford to. I think that he's already won, do you know what I mean? Like, he's made his point and he has done that very successfully. I think he can afford to be pragmatic about this, and I'm not saying we're bringing Aubameyang back as captain. I'm not even saying we're bringing him back necessarily as a starter. I'm saying that if there's 20 minutes to go in a game and we need a goal and it's Eddie Nketiah or Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I know who I'm choosing.
Yes, I agree with you. The issue then is whether that's a role that Aubameyang is willing to fulfill. And look, I'm not casting any aspersions on him or anything like that, but it is well below, you know, where he was.
Yeah,
three months ago, you know, when he started the season pretty well and was scoring some goals, you know, to be then, for whatever reason, a bit part player, a super sub, a guy who's just coming on. I mean, do you get what you need from a player in those circumstances? Even if you are willing to be expedient and pragmatic, you know, is the motivation of the player, which is, you know, a key consideration, is that sufficient for him to perform at the level you want him to perform at, you know?
Yeah.
Like, players can be, like, they can go out and they can try, but if they're not, you know, if there's something going on, you don't get the best out of them, so.
I guess that will inform Arsenal's thinking, what they think is possible there. I mean, Aubameyang, I think Gabon play Ghana today. If Gabon get a result, it sends Ghana home. We could have Thomas Partey back next week. So we're all rooting for Aubameyang today, who I think is now back from COVID. Yeah, basically, I'm not sure you can, you know, if they don't get Vlahovic, who is the one this January, I'm not sure that you could get someone better than Aubameyang. And so if you can repair that,
yeah,
that is the expedient, smart thing to do.
Yeah,
I hope it's possible.
There's not a lot out there in the market, you know, when it comes to short-term striker solutions, you know, which is why I guess we're
really hard,
yeah, why we're pushing for Vlahovic. Yeah, let's see what kind of powers of persuasion Mikel Arteta and Edu have if they can get this done. So,
Sammy, who's at AFC Sammy, says, good morning, chaps. How annoyed and confused do you think Nuno was last night when, after being subbed off during the first half versus Forest, he got stripped twice during this game only to be told to go back to the bench again?
I think that's just, you know, part and parcel of football. It happens. You're ready to come on, and a player like Saka was, looked to me like he was going to come off and then decided to
He nearly
to,
came
to
on in the first half, didn't he? He was stripped off when Chambers came on.
That's
was
right,
Chambers?
Yeah. They were going to make
no,
a
when
double
when Saka got sent off, yeah. When Holden came on, that was it.
I'm curious to know what they were going to do there. Like, who was he coming on for? Who was he going to come on for there? If we were going to make a double change with Holding and Tavares, who was going to come off?
I think it could only have been Tierney. So I was told in the build-up to the game that Tierney was injured. He didn't train some days this week. Mm. So I thought maybe Tierney. And or alternatively, one of Martinelli and Saka, and he was going to be asked to just sort of, you know, go up and down the line in the way that they did. But yeah, I don't think it was personal at all. And actually, I was quite encouraged by, I mean, we've only heard Arteta's side of it, but I was quite encouraged by what he said about the Nuno situation and crucially the player's response to it.
Yeah, exactly. He was pretty positive about the whole thing. And I think we can read into the fact that Nuno was on the bench and played and came on last night as evidence that there isn't a big issue because, you know, he's not now somewhere in Siberia, you know, exiled like some other players have been. So he's involved, and I think that particular issue at Nottingham Forest, you know, wasn't great for anyone, but that's it. They've drawn a line under it and they go again. So
yeah.
Here's a question from the Discord. We had one on Twitter as well, if I can find it here. On the Discord, John Parkin says, hi chaps, injuries and suspensions notwithstanding, is Leno going to play again this season, do you think? Where does that leave his Arsenal career? And Rian Vacha on Twitter, at Rian Vacha, says, with Ramsdale now essentially also the Carabao keeper and us already out of the FA Cup, do you think there's a chance we let Leno leave in January? It's a World Cup year and I see no more minutes for him this season.
I don't think you'll be allowed to leave.
That's
what I was told before Christmas, that Arsenal were very clear. They want two good goalkeepers and they expect him to stay until the summer. Did you think it was harsh to take him out?
No. Cup semi-final. I think I said it to Lewis on the preview podcast that I wouldn't have been surprised if Ramsdale started. Like I was saying, if we got to the final, who would you start? Ramsdale. He's the number one goalkeeper. You're in a cup final. Semi-final is slightly less important, but, you know, it's a bit harsh, but it is what it is. And I think, I think it's, you know, it's done for Leno here, but not until the summer. I can't see anything happening before the summer. I mean, Ramsdale could get an injury, could get a suspension, and we need another goalkeeper. We need a good goalkeeper. We don't have, you know, it's not like we have an Emi Martinez as the third-choice goalkeeper right now. You know, we don't have that that little bit of a security blanket where we could let the number two guy go. We can't do it. So were you surprised that Ramsdale started?
Not entirely, because I thought it was a possibility before the first leg that got postponed. I think it was under discussion at that stage. I think it's easier to make the change at the semi-final than the final, actually, and it makes it feel like less of a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a better time to do it, actually. And I think that although Ramsdale had some whiffy moments, there's particularly that one where he came out to the near post and Liverpool had that great chance to score. I think he is part of the defensive unit and there is something to be gained from keeping those guys together. They tend to bail each other out, as they did last night.
Yeah.
So I think it was the right call. And I think if Leno was a guy who was, I don't know, part of the long-term future, maybe you'd be more concerned about making him feel part of things or giving him assurances. But I think everybody's aware he's going to go in the summer. And I think he goes with his head pretty high. Like a lot of players who, when they're dropped, there've been a lot of players who've left Arsenal under clouds recently in terms of, you know, speaking out in the media or falling out with the manager. Mm. Leno really hasn't done anything like that. There was one interview where he said, oh, Arteta was a bit vague with me about why I was dropped back in August. But since then, he's knuckled down. When he's been asked to play, he's played well. I still think he's a good goalkeeper and I hope we get some money for him because he's an international player. And I wish him all the best, to be honest, because I think for the most part for Arsenal, he performed really well. And there were times when we were dire and he was our saviour many times.
No, I agree. And I don't think Leno was necessarily dropped, per se. You know, it wasn't that he was performing really badly and we absolutely had to make a change in that position because everybody was fairly surprised when Ramsdale came in that quickly. But I think it was more about adding what Ramsdale brings to the team than Leno's poor performances, you know? Mm. So
absolutely, yeah.
All right. Have you got any more? I don't have any more.
I don't think I do either. I think, right. we'll leave it there. It's interesting, as we're talking, there's sort of more whispers and rumours and noises going around about this postponement issue. I think Tottenham have the feeling that it could go, that Arsenal might request a postponement, but nothing. We're talking at 11:30 on a Friday. Yeah. Nothing formally has gone in from Arsenal. So who knows? Who knows if we'll have a game Sunday or not? Very difficult to say right now. I think it's genuinely in the balance.
Right. Okay. Well, look, we'll wait and see. It'll all play out. Whatever happens, though, we'll do an Arsecast extra for you on Monday.
Because
that's what we do. In the meantime, as ever, thank you for being here. And thank you for listening and for all your comments and subscriptions and everything else. We really do appreciate it. Fingers crossed we can play on Sunday because I'm looking forward to the Martinelli hat trick at White Hart Lane. So we'll see what happens. Either way, though, we'll be here on Monday with an Arsecast extra. Until then, take it easy.
Bye bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.